This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello and welcome to the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information, brought to you by the Cornell University Turfgrass Program in partnership with the New York State Turfgrass Association. My name is Frank Rossi. I'm Associate Professor of Horticulture here at the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences at Cornell University, and the following are observations and recommendations for the week of October 5th, 2009. Well, moving into the fall growing season, the focus shifts to recovery, weed control, and preparation for next season. Decisions you make now for renovation, soil amending, weed control, and fertilization will play big dividends next season. Comparatively, stressing the turf by maintaining low mowing heights, skimping on fertilization, and avoiding weed control will leave your turf struggling to get started next spring. Don't be afraid to roll your sports turf and, of course, your putting surface as well, to minimize mowing that's been shown to enhance turf quality. Granular herbicides are not as effective as liquid spray, so timing your applications now will help with more thorough control. The weather report. In spite of the cool daytime temperatures, it was a warmer than normal week last week, mostly due to above normal evening temperatures. And the heat this year, we are winding down on growing degree day accumulation for the season. It appears we will end up about 150 to 200 degree days behind last year's totals, depending on the region of the Northeast, right about normal or slightly behind by a few days. Rainfall, most of the region received about 1 inch, except along the lakes where they received 3 to 4 inches. A big slowdown in evapotranspiration with less than a half an inch region-wide, and soil temperatures at 2 inch depth, where highs are in the upper 60s to 70s and lows in the 50s to 60s from north to south. This week's forecast, a continuing pattern of cool days and warm nights, will start the week with days in the 60s and night in the upper 50s. Some clear nights early may allow temps to dip into the 30s. Rainfall is expected in the Tuesday to Wednesday period, then some drying. The long-term forecast is calling for a warming trend with normal precipitation. And in general, we expect a low disease risk week. The Cornell Cooperative Extension update begins with the Finger Lakes report from Walt Nelson. Intense traffic and shorter day length and either excessive or low soil moisture are wreaking havoc on local sports fields. In the Capital District, Dave Chinnery, samples of general lawn decline in this week and both had large numbers of fusarium spores, severe compaction problems on some sports fields. After the 1 inch or so of rain over the weekend, it was so poorly drained as to almost have standing water everywhere. A local coach is complaining about injuries from synthetic turf, but Clegg readings were low, and I don't think the surface hardness is at all a problem. The coach also thinks that the rubber infill is moving around, but we saw no evidence of that. Other than that, the zoysia is turning brown in the Capital District. The Westchester report from Jerry Giordano and Rick Harper. The turf lab has slowed significantly this week, with no samples of turf having been submitted. Questions to the horticulture call-in line have only involved queries about renovation. Callers have described situations where the turf on a given property is now virtually non-existent. Per extended conversations, previous disease activity, poor growing conditions such as shade and compacted soil, or insect activity such as chinch bug is suspected. In some cases, weed grasses such as bentgrass have been described as having died out, leaving nearly bare soil or completely dead areas. Many of those who have called not understood the difficulties inherent in maintaining a lawn among significant tree cover. Core aerification continues to be a hot topic of conversation as commercial turf interests and homeowners attempt remediation on lawns that have failed. More and more, the request is less for high-maintenance bluegrass lawn, but instead for lawns comprised of species that are easy to maintain. And finally, from Long Island, Tom Kowalsik. A sod sample was received with a variety of leaf spot problems. There appears to be some underlying soil issues and possibly fertility issues as well. A healthy population of oriental beetles been identified in a rooftop garden with beetles ranging from the first instar at about 3/8 inch to third instar at about 3/4 of an inch. And the Cornell Turfgrass Short Course for this December 2009, don't skimp on your education. In difficult economic times, earn more than 15 DEC credits. The sports turf update from Joanne Grudidario talks about top dressing sports fields. Top dressing helps to amend physical soil properties and create a better growing environment for the turf. It can level the playing field when minor variations in depressions are apparent and help reduce thatch. Managers should address these questions before adding this as a routine practice. Do you have enough money in your budget to top dress? Do you have the necessary equipment? Do you have access to a readily available, consistent top dressing material? Top dressing is difficult to do correctly, and if done properly, could cause long-term damage. If you apply it too slowly or not frequent enough, thatch layers can build up, resulting in alternate layers of thatch and soil. If applied too heavy on existing thatch layer, it can bury the thatch and cause a barrier to root growth. When budgets allow and conditions warrant, if top dressing is usually done right after core cultivation and at a minimum 1 to 2 times per year. That is, in the spring when slit seeding or in the fall after the end of the playing season. Selecting the correct top dressing material is critical and depends on the purpose of top dressing. If the existing soil does not require any modification, the soil from coring or one similar in texture can be used as top dressing. After aerification, the cores can be dragged so they can fill the aeration holes. No layering problems will occur. If your field is a native soil containing clay and silt and drains poorly, you will want to use a different tactic to correct the problem. Core aerate the field, remove the soil cores, and top dress with straight sand, one that is regular, when it is angular and coarse. A mix of 80% sand and 20% organic matter would be ideal. After applying the top dressing material, first pull the drag mat, making small circles, then enlarge ovals. The material can filter into the aeration holes and also provide a level field. Remember, the chosen top dressing material needs to be consistent in type and particle size and available for future applications. Variations in particle size can lead to layering, which will disrupt drainage and rooting. Frequent applications can, over time, actually modify the soil profile. The amount of top dressing material will depend on the purpose of the top dressing. A light application is usually used when seeding or overseeding. About 1.5 cubic yards will be needed for each 1,000 square foot when 1/16 of an inch to 3/8 inch layer is desired. Top dressing to amend the soil to relieve compaction will require a heavier application enough to fill the aeration holes. A soil testing update from our own Marty Petrovic here in the Department of Horticulture, announcing a lab partnership for our soil testing services. Effective July 1, 2009, Cornell University and Dairy One combined their strengths to provide soil and plant testing services in a new venture called AgroOne. Cornell University's College of Agriculture and Life Sciences and Dairy One Cooperative Incorporated are collaborating through AgroOne to ensure high-quality soil, plant, tissue, and nutrient laboratory testing services available to them now and into the future. Additionally, the collaboration will provide a mechanism for delivery of new analytical services and systems in the future. Cornell's routine soil and plant tissue analysis will move to the AgroOne laboratory housed at Dairy One's Ithaca facility. This allows Cornell to focus on soil plant research and the development of innovative analytical methods, while AgroOne will focus on providing commercial soil and plant tissue analysis to farmers and their advisors. AgroOne will provide soil and plant tissue testing services available previously through the Cornell Nutrient Analysis Lab, along with additional analytical services. Key inputs regarding analytical methods and quality control will be provided by Cornell, and Cornell nutrient management guidelines will be provided by Cornell through AgroOne. Cornell's move away from commercial laboratory research and spinning off commercially viable technologies to the private sector, freeing up resources previously dedicated to commercial soil and plant tissue lab services, will allow Cornell to enhance its research capabilities while improving the amount of data available through AgroOne. For more information on forms and sample submission, visit www.dairyone.com/agroone/default.htm. Gazing in the grass this week, my column focuses on broadleaf weed control. Many studies have confirmed over the years that perennial broadleaf weed control and control of newly germinated broadleaf winter annuals, chickweed and henbit, is best achieved at this time of year. In speaking with Randy Prostak, our UMass Extension weed specialist, he suggests that controlling weeds now still allows for time for the turf to fill in bare spots left by dying weeds. Once a dandelion or plantain withers and dies, it will leave a bare spot that will likely refill with another weed if the existing turf does not fill in. In addition, as more schools and landscapers have moved to more use of granular herbicides to avoid the appearance and perception associated with spraying liquids, there's been a decline in control. In general, there will be a significant reduction in control with granular herbicides that require foliar absorption when compared to the same herbicide applied as a liquid spray. Also, as Marty Petrovic indicated in a conversation, waiting longer to make your broadleaf herbicide application and allowing the herbicide to sit in the soil undegraded will increase the likelihood of leaching. In fact, an older study under Marty's direction was able to find broadleaf herbicides in the leachate from herbicide applications in the fall more than 200 days after application. Don't miss the price reduction for the Cornell Turfgrass Short Course in 2009, only $500, a $200 savings compared to previous years. This year, it'll be December 7th through the 11th, 2009 in Ithaca, and more info and registration can be found at www.hort.cornell.edu/turf/events/index.htm. Thank you for joining me this week for the weekly installment of the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information. I'm Frank Rossi, Associate Professor of Turfgrass Science in the Department of Horticulture here at Cornell University, and I hope you have a great week.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.